Okay, Commissioner Dustin, why don't you take a seat? Morning, Dustin.
Morning, Mike.
Morning.
Yeah, I'll call the July 26th, 2017 NID Board Meeting to order. Please rise for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to take a public comment on items that are not otherwise on the agenda.
Good morning. I'm Marin Lipowitz from Grass Valley. I'd like to invite everyone to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the Earth, anyone who'd like to. I pledge allegiance to the Earth and all the life it supports. One planet in our care, irreplaceable, with sustenance and respect for all. I'd like to comment this morning on the fact that we are rushing headlong into general extinction on this planet, and that our response to that should be responsible management, responsible husbandry, responsible care for the planet. And we don't believe that dams fall into that category. And I'd like to open my comments with a graph. This is the percent survival of large mammal species on the continents that are represented. The black arrow represents the arrival of Homo sapiens on the planet. This is Africa. You can see the species did fairly well, the large mammal species. This is Australia. Introduction of Homo sapiens, not so well. North America, introduction of Homo sapiens, not so well either. Madagascar, I don't know why that was thrown in there. Introduction of Homo sapiens, not so well. This is thousands of years ago, 100,000 years ago to today. This is what we've done to our brethren, the large mammal species on the planet. So if we can take that as an indicator of where we're going with our sapiens, maybe we're not so sapiens after all. Maybe we need more wisdom to blend with our knowledge as a knowledgeable species. And I'd like to read something from Hank Wesselman, who's a research anthropaleontologist. He was on the team that discovered Lucy in Africa. While he was in Africa, he was exposed to shamanist principles. He became a shaman practitioner. So he went from scientist to mystic. And he was immediately dismissed from his academic circles because he was no longer credible. But I'd like to read something from his latest book. It's called The Reenchantment. And his theory is that we need to reenchant our approach to nature. Science has revealed conclusively that despite the well-funded efforts of the climate deniers, the big climatic shift is already upon us, one that will utterly change our world, our societies, and our lives. This means that the decisions we make in the here and now will create...
Your time has expired.
Okay.
Carmen Mateo, Grass Valley, also Nevada County Green Party Council member. And I am going to continue Marin's efforts in reading this. My great Hawaiian friend, the Kahuna Hale Makua, often observed that the foundation stone for indigenous mind is respect. By contrast, the foundation for Western mind is domination. Our Judeo-Christian mythos gave us human domination over the natural world and each other, and this mode of operating is simply not sustainable. In my humble opinion, the time has come for an upgrade in our cultural mythos, and at all levels, one that will include respect for that which will serve and support us forever. I am talking about nature, and forever is a very long time. I have come to suspect that the experience of our re-enchantment may hold the guarantee of humanity's continued survival on planet Earth, as well as a guarantee for our thriving during the centuries and millennia to come. This is because modern visionaries hold profound and enduring reverence for everyone and everything that we encounter in life, and for all that is. In a mystic sense, this is all that is, and none other than Mother Nature, the world soul called Sophia. Sophia, in 2010, Michael Kraft, who worked in the programming department at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, gave me the book, Not in His Image, Gnostic Vision, Sacred Ecology, and the Future of Belief, by a meta-historian named John Lamb Lush. In it, Lush reveals that the mystery schools of the ancient world proclaim Sophia, the soul of the world, to be an immensely wise, sentient being. They also held that the physical embodiment of Sophia is our beautiful planet Earth, which may today refer as to Gaia, following the teachings of the ancient Greeks and the ideas of the scientist and visionary James Lovelock. The Gnostics of the classical period describe Sophia's spiritual essence as a visible milky white light with a voice and vast intelligence. We're talking about that organic misty radiance that possesses a godlike mind. Visionaries and mystics across time have achieved communion with this intelligence, and it may impart knowledge and guidance directly to us if we are so honored. Do you remember the story of the biblical prophet Elijah finding himself in the presence of an angel of the Lord in the 9th century BCE? He didn't see this being as a winged superhuman. He saw it as a white light, a brilliant radiance with a voice. That's Sophia. In a mythic perspective, Sophia was...
Your time has expired.
Nicole Ragland, Grass Valley. Good morning. I myself was honored to encounter Sophia at the bottom of a cinder crater on the side of the great mountain of Vision Mauna Kea on Hawaii Island in 2003. A story I share in the Bowl of Light, it was under the guidance of the Kahuna Hale Makua that she appeared to me in a spirit vision as a mass living white light with a voice. To say I was impressed would be an understatement of vast proportions. I was stunned. Years later, after reading Lash's book, I connected with Lash himself through his website. And our third or fourth email exchange revealed that he had established an ongoing mystical connection with Sophia and that he had given her a new name to which she seemed to respond. Allow me to note here that the soul of our world inhabits the living biosphere of our planet, and more. Lash revealed further that Sophia likes diversity and innovation, and in his sharing of this new name with me, I decided to try it out to see if she would respond to me. I live in the district of South Kona of Hawaii Island, and so on a bright sunny morning, I went down to the coast. The immense ocean stretching to the horizon was flat, virtually no waves. I walked right to the end of a black lava flow at the edge. The re-enchantment is full of magic, insight, profound realizations about nature and the spirit of life.
Richard Thomas, Nevada City, California. We're a water customer. When you appear before the Board of Supervisors, there's a timer on the counter in front of you that shows 3 minutes. If it's limited time that you have to speak, it's a service to the speakers. It's a great service to the chair, who is in that very uncomfortable position of having to interrupt a speaker who could be at a very important point in their presentation. Having witnessed some of the recent work that J.R. Lewis can accomplish, I have little doubt that he could put together something in about 5 minutes with spare parts that he could find in his office. I know they're available online. I've researched them. There's too many choices for me to deal with. I don't make choices easily, but I'm sure your purchasing department could, for under $100, put something on your desk that would save the chair and the speakers the uncomfortable position of having to have themselves interrupted. Thank you.
Morning, NID. Mike Pasner, Indian Springs Organic Farm, raw water user in Penn Valley on the Tar Ditch for 31 years farming with your water. I'm here as a reminder of NID's two major problems that they have right now, that we have right now. First, intensive use of herbicide. Your aquatic herbicide program, putting elemental copper, Cutrien, Natri directly into 350 miles of ditches, and then the terrestrial spraying of Roundup, which has now been determined a carcinogen. You've been spraying that for the 31 years I've been around and my neighbors and all over the ditch system for 31 years. You'll probably have to quit that now because it has been determined a carcinogen. People knew there were problems with it 30 and 40 years ago. We need to see serious reductions in your herbicide use. You're in the business of selling water, not poison. Second is Centennial Reservoir and Power. This will prove to be NID's worst project ever, costing the ratepayers the most money of anything NID has ever done. Stop throwing good money after bad and dump this loser of a project. Thank you.
Hi, Diana Suarez, Colfax. I want to follow up what Mike said about stopping this project before you spend so much money on it when it isn't even the preferred project of an EIR or an EIS. You haven't even got a draft EIS, and you're putting millions of dollars in PR and planning for the last resort project. According to the Army Corps of Engineers, the dam is supposed to be the last resort. Where is the information on groundwater storage? Where is the information on the other projects that are supposed to be the alternatives in the EIS? This is what we, the public, want to see, not just a full speed ahead with a dam. It kind of gives the impression that the board is a little biased in the favor of that project. In fact, it's blatantly obvious that a neutral and well-reasoned decision is very questionable coming from a board that is so pro-dam. Thank you.
Betsy Lombard, Nevada City, California. I'm against the dam for a lot of reasons, but I want to encourage you to look at it from a spiritual perspective, which you're probably going, oh yeah, right, that again. Mother Nature has all kinds of gifts for us that are right there, right now. If you eradicate those things, it's like buying a new pair of shoes when you really don't need one and you haven't even polished the shoes you already had in your closet. In America, we think that we always need the next thing, more things, a new thing, a different thing. We don't need a new thing. We don't need a different thing. We need to respect what we have in a beautiful, free-flowing, little chunk of river that's left.
My name's Shirley Osgood. I live in Grass Valley, and I'm an NID customer. And I'm here for my grandchildren, whom you may have seen out there a couple weeks ago, holding a banner with me. Little innocent. 4 and 5 year olds who have been to the Bear River with me to worship and pray. And I would like to support what's been said earlier about the bear. And I just am in touch with the incredible amount of courage that it would take for those of you who have invested so much moving towards this dam to be able to stop that thought with the knowledge that you may have gained since all this momentum towards the dam and back up and change your route. But I encourage you to have that courage. Thank you very much.
Okay, Any other public comment? Then I'd like to move on to the consent agenda, please.
I have a request to pull, please, number 3 and number 4 for discussion.
Okay.
There's a typo on 221 of the minutes, page 221. President Miller did not
thank you
reside
much.
As chair that day, nor do I live in Spencerville. It's President Wilcox.
Thank you, Scott.
That, somebody else might have noticed that, yeah.
I noticed it, but I, you're quite correct. Thank you. Do I hear a motion to adopt the amended minutes and the consent agenda minus the two items that were pulled?
So moved. Second.
See?
Look at that. Is that synchronicity or what?
It Jinx. Was. Who's my first, please?
Jinx.
Pick one. Director Miller is my first.
Jinx.
Director Drew is my second. Okay.
Quick enough.
Division 1?
Aye.
Division 2?
Aye.
Division 3?
Aye.
Division 4?
Aye.
Division 5?
Aye. Congratulations on your nomination, Rem. And happy birthday to you.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for doing this. For doing Region 3.
Okay.
He's a contractor.
Marvin, you're up. Marvin.
Oh, Maynard?
Yeah,
I warned him.
Okay. Rather than presenting the item, Nancy, maybe you could just tell us what your concerns
well,
are.
Well, I would like to ask more. Marvin and I spoke to him earlier to do an overview for number 3, the quarterly investment and short-term cash forecast report, please.
Sure.
So that we do have an opportunity for discussion.
Good morning, board.
Good morning.
And staff and public. This is the quarterly investment report for the period ending June 30. And the quarterly investment is maintained in accordance with the policy of safety, liquidity, and yield. And the report also indicates that the liquid assets of the district are sufficient to meet short-term obligations. The report itself demonstrates the assets that are invested in. So if you look at the report, you'll see the type of issues within the portfolio, the market value and the gain and the price. These go up and down. You also see the short-term investments in the late fund, Wells Fargo. You also see year-to-date the earnings of the portfolio have been a little bit over $500,000. When you look at the chart, it gives you the combination of long-term versus short-term assets. So when you look at the chart, you can see the big blue line is the long-term.
What does that mean, Marvin?
Long-term is in accordance with the long-term investments. So if you look at the prior page on page 2 of 5, you see the combination of the long-term investments, about $60.2 million. And you see those combinations are corporate CDs, agency securities, things of this nature. The line also gives you the earnings. And so it goes up or down depending upon whether you're heavily invested in short term or long term. And we try to keep as long as we can, provided that we can meet our liquidity. The chart itself gives you the maturity schedule. So can you see the agency is, the district gets heavily invested in 2021. Any huge changes in purchases and things of this nature that are not budgeted will cause that 65% to go down. So if the board was to start funding something that we didn't budget for, or buying something that we didn't budget for, that will continue to push that down.
Marvin, how does that affect on call? So investments that are called will shift that as well, correct?
Yes. If investments are called, they will shift into short term. And depending upon the forecasted spending patterns, I might just send them back out long term. But they could be called. Calls are subject to market rates. So as new issues are issued, new federal issues are issued, if they're issuing at a rate different than the rates we're holding, they may be called, so the federal agency might be trying to save money.
Perhaps you could explain the definition of long-term versus short-term, because the long-term ones are ones that are due in 2021. Depending on your view, that could also be short-term.
Yes, exactly right.
So it's a question of definition.
Definition.
So what is the definition?
Short-term investments are investments that are very liquid, meaning that they can be used within 90 days. So short-term investments are cash that can be converted, or investments that can be converted into cash within 90 days. And long-term or longer term, so in 2018, that's long-term. In 2021, obviously, it's long-term, it's just a little longer. Mm-hmm. And the farther you go out, the more interest you will earn, because the more the investor has to pay you a premium for using your money a long time. So, you know, you will earn more farther you go out.
So in other words, another way of saying it is that by keeping a larger chunk of the portfolio on the longer term side, you're maximizing the return for the district.
There you go.
Saving money.
There you go. This year we'll probably earn about $800,000 or $900,000 more in investments than when I came here. So it's because we've shifted mostly long term. There is a risk to it if Gary's spending gets erratic. But
that's a straight up dollar.
That's a dollar. But it's the ideal is that we are very dialed in to the spending pattern. When you look at the cash forecast, the short-term cash forecast, that little schedule is very important. So when you look at your short-term cash forecast schedule, that's very important. And you look at the last column of that report that says reconcile the budget, it's me considering everything budgeted, it's me considering encumbrances that are brought over from next year, it's me considering how much encumbrances we're going to bring over next year, also spending coming in.
Okay, another question.
You got the 505 there with that last reference. The reconciliatory column. That's
there you 505. Go. There you go. The reconciliation.
You didn't.
That's 505.
You left us on 205.
Okay.
Trying to follow.
So 205 is where we stopped. And 205 gives you the combinations of your long term and your short term guys. And also an annualized return estimate. This is an annualized return estimate at the bottom of the schedule. It's not actually there, we're not there yet, but it's just our estimate of where we will be at.
Okay, a question. In our annual budget, we budget in an expected investment return. Is what we're getting equal to, less than, or more than what we're budgeting? And of course, if it's more than that helps ease pressure on the rest of the budget.
Without a doubt. We actually budgeted about $700,000 in investment returns, and we're already at $550,000. So it's already, it's both a conservative estimate.
We're on track to realize the 2017 budget.
Yes.
Okay. So it's fully within our expectation.
Without a doubt, yes.
Okay.
So we had some requirements for the last two bonds we've had.
Yes.
So could you talk about how this budget reflects that requirement?
That these are the bonds that we issued or the bonds that were called?
These are the issues. So you're talking about the debt service ratio?
Right. Requirement for debt service.
Yes. The debt service ratio requirement is linked with the budget estimate. So at the beginning of the budget period, the bond documents require us to estimate the debt service coverage. I think it has to be like 1.25%. And so that estimate is given at the time of the budget. The documents don't require us to do that estimate each throughout the year. It just requires us to do it at the beginning of the budget period.
Well, we went to the bond market in 2016.
Yes.
We issued bonds for $24 million, maybe?
We issued bonds for about $20.2 million. At a premium of about $4.5 million.
Okay. And so we've received those funds, so we take those funds and reinvest them.
Yes.
And so this cash reserve is partly a result of the bond funding that we've already received, most of which is to pay for the Combi Phase 1 project.
Yes, yes. On page 205, your total investments on page 205, it does not include your bond proceeds. So in addition to the 81.3 here, we have another 20 point something of bond proceeds. So this doesn't include that.
Okay.
We can't legally pool those investments together. They have to be separate, yeah.
When the investment criteria around those funds is very controlled.
Yes, it is. It is. The bond documents gave us the authority to be the fiscal agent, but at the same time, there's still restraints on Rem and I in terms of what we can do with them.
Okay, so the financing that we've already received for the Combi Phase 1 project is essentially in the bank, but it does not count as part of these long and short-term investments.
There you go.
Correct.
Okay.
That's
correct.
Okay, that's helpful.
Yes.
But thanks.
And we're doing very well on those investments as well.
Did we answer the question, Nancy, about the
debt
service?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted to know where it appears.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my question is if it appears at the beginning of a budget year.
Yes.
And not again until next year.
There you go. Not again until next year.
How does the board know that we're keeping solvent in terms of the viewpoint from the bond people?
Well, the board has the authority to ask me to report on reserves when I report on this. This is me reporting portfolio activity.
Right.
We typically don't calculate the debt service coverage throughout the year. I mean, we can, but we just don't, because you have to forecast. You know, you forecast revenue expenses at the end of the year, right? So the bond documents don't require me to keep that coverage based upon a forecast, but based upon an adopted budget.
So as long as we stay within the adopted budget, we're staying within the debt service coverage.
But we always do a forecast, but just as long as you know it's a forecast.
I'm not trying to make work for you, trying to make it understandable.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we stay within the budget, and then the accounting, which is the next item on the agenda, is for the budget.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
So page 4 or 5, 4 or 5 just gives you the schedule for, just shows you the maturity schedule. And these bonds can be called anywhere along this maturity schedule, depending upon how new issues are coming out in the market. Rim and I look at this quite frequently, so he's aware of that. Page 505 is where the magic happens. So 505 is where really all the magic happens. It's where I'm looking at where we are actually in December. I'm looking at where we are actually throughout the year. I'm forecasting to the end of the year based upon the budget, as well as open POs and things, how I think we're going to spend. And then that last column reconciles to the budget, and it gives you an estimate at the end of January of where I think the cash will be. So depending upon how low this figure gets, Rem and I have discussed what he's comfortable with in terms of how low it gets. If this liquidity position, like 9.5 at the end of January, if there were to be 4.5, it'd probably be too low.
And
I'd probably move some long-term back. But we have high-grade investments. So high-grade investments are investments I can just go and sell if I need to sell. They're very high-grade investments. So there's a lot of activity happening there, but make a long story short, we are in a good liquidity position.
Okay. You pulled both items, Nancy?
Yes.
Okay.
Please. I have questions for number 5.
A question on this, on number...
I'm sorry.
3.
That was 3. I'm 4.
Okay. On page 4. Okay.
I will ask a question.
So this is a mid-year accountability, as I see it, for how various parts of the budget have been spent. And there are places where there are overages in the 90%. They're rare,
mm-hmm.
and even higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are those handled internally? Does the manager of a department get this information so that they can make adjustments in some way, or how is it handled internally?
So I can answer that, Nancy.
So I've directed the finance manager to make this report available to the managers on the 15th of every month. So the managers then can go through their departments and ensure that their spending patterns are appropriate. I'm reviewing this, Marvin's reviewing this, and the department heads are reviewing it. If somebody hits in the higher percentile, I have a discussion with the manager so that we know that either the money, so for consulting, that's one that normally hits high early because we're encumbering those contracts, we're getting that consulting work up and running. So watching salaries, that's kind of a constant burn through the year if you're in certain departments, but in others like operations or recreation is a great one. You know, we come on, there's a big fast burn, it'll burn off right towards the end. So it's really the department heads that are watching for the cyclical nature of what they're doing, but senior management is watching all the time, and we're tagging certain areas, and we, because what I want to be able to do is say, is this high, is it not high? Is something getting charged into this account that should or shouldn't be charged into the account? And, you know, every now and then we find things that are erroneously coded and we catch them and we put them back where they belong. But it's happening on a monthly basis. On the 15th, this report rolls out to all the managers.
One of the things that I noticed was in a couple of three places, quite an increase in insurance costs, health insurance costs. I thought those were pretty predictable at the beginning of the year when we do the budget, that we get a set amount, so yeah. Did somebody
it isn't.
Have a catastrophe that yeah. That we had to pay extra for?
No.
Well, implosion of a boat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not just the premiums that we're paying for insurance, but also it's disability insurance and some of the other things that hit that account. So if we have an employee that goes out on disability and we're paying back that money or we're picking up those
okay.
So all of that stuff goes into that bucket.
Gotcha. Thank you. So I also did ask in the next quarterly accounting if we could have an accounting on the reserves, please.
Oh, yes. Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I appreciate it. And mm-hmm. I really appreciate spending some time on this because I think it's a board responsibility and I don't think we have an accountant here on the board, so.
That's for sure.
It's good for us to use it for an opportunity to ask our questions.
Okay.
So I'd appreciate it if it could be an open session.
Okay.
And I concur totally with what Nancy just said.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks. So I move for the approval of items number, I better find out what I'm talking about, 3 and 4 on the consent agenda.
And we'll have a question.
Yeah, Martin,
sorry.
Yes. It's okay. could you give us an example of a high-grade investment?
Yes. Yes, a high-grade investment is an investment of single A or higher. Single A or higher. So the investments typically range from single A, double A, triple A. High-grade is A or higher. And our investment policy only allows high-grade investments.
So what would be an example of that?
Each one of these treasuries that we've invested in. So if you look on page, on page 1 of 5, or 2 of 5. So the government obligations, look at that first column, our government obligation.
Yeah.
And just go down to the first one, FFCB, the Federal Farm Commercial Bank. All of these investments are AA plus or higher. So all your federal government obligations are backed by the full federal, full faith and credit of the U.S. government. So they're high grade.
So they can be, they're fairly liquid.
Exactly. If I need to go sell one, I could sell it tomorrow. Might take a little discount on it.
That's what I meant.
But yeah, but I could sell it tomorrow, yeah.
So whatever this interest rate is could be discounted.
Yes, and right now, as of June 30th, you can see in the column that says net unrealized gains or losses, that tells you that it would sell at a discount if I was to sold it at June 30th. That would be the discount. But there's a little give and take between the brokers that we use and stuff.
So is it traded on a daily market?
Yes, they're traded. It's a very active, liquid secondary market. So you can sell these government agencies anytime. Sell them with a little discount. The last thing I could point out is that on your last page of your monthly report, where it says budget amendments, so the last page of your monthly report says budget amendments. you can see how that figure is reconciled to the cash forecast. So you see that last figure of 8.4 million. And then when you look at the last page of your cash forecast, you will find that same figure on the right side. So you can see that we're actually reconciling all the budgets and budget amendments to the cash forecast. So there's no disconnection between money that we're carrying over and the forecast of the cash, which is very important.
Second, Director Weber's motion.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Division 1.
Aye.
Division 2.
Aye.
Division 3.
Aye.
Division 4.
Aye.
Division 5.
Aye. Moving on.
It's a review and receive. Does it require a motion or feature?
It requires a motion on the consent agenda.
Right. No, today we're saying that we move forward and have it as an open item.
That's a debatable point. You're right, Scott. But since it was would have required a motion on the consent agenda, might as well have one here.
I seconded it.
Thank you so much.
As we move forward.
Good. Moving on to item number 6. Chicago Park Powerhouse Draft Tube Replacement Project. It's in a rough operating zone, so
yeah.
It's just having a hard time.
All right, here we go. While this is getting ready, there are some copies of the presentation on the table over there.
People are interested. Marvin doesn't pick on Keene at all. He pick on Gary.
I bring the revenue in.
Gary's so much fun to pick on.
But here we're spending out.
Yeah.
Because I'm a sweet, loving nature person.
All right. Can bites.
Yeah. Good morning, staff, directors, staff, and members of the public. My name is Kean Summers. I'm the hydroelectric manager. I'm here today to talk to you about the Chicago Park Draft Tube Replacement Project. Before we get too far into this, wanted to make sure everybody knew what a draft tube was. We had a little discussion about that at the engineering committee, and so we have a figure here of a typical hydroelectric plant. You've got your headwater up at the top. It follows the penstock down into the turbine. This is actually the runner down here, which is what the water contacts and spins. Turns the generator, which generates the power, which puts our renewable carbon-free power out on the lines.
I'm sorry, renewable carbon-free?
We don't generate any carbon when we're with hydropower, so.
Benefit?
Stop being so cynical.
After,
and we make electricity four times with the same drop of water?
Many times.
Unbelievable.
As it drops through the runner, we hit the draft tube. So essentially, once the water spins the runner, it hits the draft tube and makes its way through to the tail race. This picture here is a little bit oversimplified, so I wanted to show a picture of the actual draft tube at Chicago Park Powerhouse. So what you'll see here, this is the section of the draft tube that we are looking to replace, this middle section. The upper section of the draft tube was replaced earlier in 2009 when we had these sorts of problems, and it was damaged. Our draft tube also continues through a concrete reinforced section here. As we get a little longer into the presentation, I want to point out this area here. We'll see some video of the problem that we're experiencing and how that area reacts.
That's just an inspection.
I have a question, Kean. This inspection portal here,
yes,
kind of in the center of that draft tube.
Yeah.
Is that smooth on the inside when it closes?
There is a plate in there, so it's generally smooth,
okay.
But there
right.
is a seam around it where it's somewhat rough.
Good.
So a little bit of background. So likely the rough operating zone at the Chicago Park Powerhouse has existed since its construction. We don't have good startup data on it, but it seems likely that it has. In the 80s, there was a significant weld repair made to the lower draft tube section, which is the part that we're looking to replace this year. It's generally in the area that we're watching now. In 2009, the upper section of the draft tube that I just pointed out was replaced with a new, thicker section, much like we're proposing to do here. And the lower draft tube, so the portion of the draft tube that's encased in concrete, was drilled and grouted. So that lasted for a while. Unfortunately, it didn't deal with the root problem, which we'll get into in a little bit as well. What we're finding, though, is that the changes in the energy market are driving us to be in this RUP operating zone more and more often. You know, we have to respond more quickly, we have to be able to operate more flexibly, and we need to be able to run in this area.
You might mention that we inherited this from PG&E in 2008, 2009, those repairs
were
under PG&E, not... I want you to look good, okay?
Oh, thank you. They put a Band-Aid on it. PG&E put a Band-Aid on it in 2009. Now we're going to have to deal with the real problem. So in September 2016, we contracted with the engineering consulting firm Black & Veatch. They diagnosed the root cause of the vibration that we're seeing there as a classical Rangens frequency. This is essentially best described as a swirl in the draft tube. Think of your bathtub when you're draining it, and you kind of see that swirl start to set up right there. The swirl whips the walls of the draft tube as it comes around, and then occasionally it'll collapse, resulting in a significant release of energy. You can see we've got a picture of it here. This is in a lab condition. This is essentially a clear draft tube with the runner, the turbine up in here, and so you can see this swirl down through the draft tube, and that whips around in there and kind of beats things to death as it goes through. Got a quick video I want to show you here. This is that plate that I described earlier in the presentation I pointed to. This is a dial indicator, and I don't expect you to be able to read that. It's got some water on it. The right-hand portion is affixed to the concrete walls, and what you can see is the movement in the draft tube as we're generating in the rough zone. So you can see it bouncing around there. You can see the whole plate moving in and out, and the video pans up to the side here, and you can see the actual sections of the wall moving. It's a bit unnerving to stand there when it's running in the rough zone. So you can see the walls pulse a little bit like a heartbeat. And it sounds like an extraordinarily loud washing machine that's out of balance that it puts around there. So the short-term solution, what are we doing now to avoid this? That video you saw was running in the rough zone. We've currently put a restriction on the ranges of power output that we can operate. So 17 to 23 megawatts we stay away from right now. That's stopping the damage from getting any worse. The long-term solution is obviously to resolve this CRF. We're still studying what that looks like. Yes, sir.
23 megawatts the max, or is this just a frequency range?
This is right in the middle of the operating zone. We have a 40 megawatt powerhouse. Yep. So essentially what happens is we'll ramp up to 17 megawatts in whatever increments we need to supply the energy. We will move through this 17 to 23 megawatt range as quickly as we can, and then we can operate more freely outside of that zone.
So how high? What's our upper?
40 megawatts.
40?
40. Yep.
And as I understand it, Ken, there are market forces that are causing us to lose operating time as a result of not being able to operate in that zone.
Yes, being able to operate in this zone will allow us to really maximize our generation and really work with the market more more favorably.
So another way of putting this, is this partially a result of changes in the power market that previously these plants were run as baseload plants, and they ran
pretty much
all the time. Now with more renewable energy coming into the grid, units like these are being taken up and down more frequently?
As the intermittent renewables like solar and wind come onto the grid, there have to be
backstops
that are able to respond. When a cloud comes across a solar farm, the demand doesn't go away, but the generation does. So we have to be able to respond to that by putting more power on the grid. If the wind stops blowing unexpectedly, again, the generation goes away, but the demand does not. So this is the solution that we have to respond to that. So we need to be able to operate in that range to backstop whatever energy is missing.
Do PG&E's facilities experience the same thing, or are they permitted to operate more on a base load?
Well, they certainly run our units harder than they run their own. I would say it's fair to say.
That was a gratuitous comment.
Yeah. But they have the ability to. Hydro is one of the few resources that's poised to backstop this market.
So they pulse our plants to save their plants.
They pulse theirs, but to a lesser extent than ours in a lot of cases.
I'll just let it lie there.
So we're continuing to study how to best resolve this. Typically, in these sorts of situations, you can apply air to the top of the head cover. That'll help deal with it. You can install some fins in the draft tube to help break up the swirl that happens in there. And then you can install the draft tube central column hub extension. Essentially, that is below the runner. You can install a tube down there that's designed to break up the swirl that happens in there. It's an effective solution, but it is extreme. The forces in there are extremely high, and it can be a real problem just sticking something in the middle of the flow to try and break it up. So it has to be beefy. It has to be very beefy, and it starts impacting the bearings all the way up through the top of the unit. So it is a solution, but I'm not favorable on that one right now. So the next step is a computational fluid dynamic or a finite element analysis, a computer model of our exact situation to determine how exactly to break up this swirl. In order to respond to the damage that's been done, currently we need to do two things. So first of all, we're going to grout the encased portion of the draft tube again. We will go through during this annual outage that we have coming up and install some more grout. And then what we're here to talk about today specifically is we'll construct a new removable section of the draft tube out of thicker walled steel. It'll be a much more beefy sort of unit. It won't be able to pulse. It'll handle these sorts of flow problems until we can get the swirl resolved. We spoke to three manufacturers to get this draft tube, and only one of those responded. This is not a small piece of equipment. It's roughly 8 feet wide by 10 feet long and 5 feet tall, so it is a significant piece of steel. It takes a very specialized shop to be able to build something like this, so we were only able to find one. That's Unico out of Benicia. Yes, sir.
U.S. Steel?
We didn't talk to them. We went to a couple of the manufacturers down in Benicia and then one locally.
There was a problem on the Bay Bridge where foreign steel failed.
We have specifications that will deal with the steel. I don't know that we've specifically specified U.S. steel, but we've specified that the steel that they use will meet our performance standards.
Somehow it didn't happen with the bolts on the Bay Bridge or whatever went on there, yeah.
Yep.
They made a big deal of it being Chinese steel.
Yeah.
Period.
So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions, but the staff's recommendation that we approve a contract for a new draft tube section. We purchased it from Unico Mechanical Corporation in the amount of $212,700. We authorize a budget amendment, and we authorize the general manager to execute the appropriate documents as recommended by the engineering committee.
Time frame coming up quick this fall?
It is very quick. As soon as we let this contract, they'll come in and start doing the measurements that they have to. They'll begin construction of the draft tube. We'll pull it in the August-September time frame. They'll take it down to their shop, make sure all the bolts line up, make sure everything lines up, and we hope to have it installed by the end of October.
Beautiful.
I think it's worth mentioning that a budget amendment does not put an overall stress on the budget because the budget transfer is coming from a project that is probably not going to go forward in the next year, so there's excess budget in the Loma Rica power project.
Move for the approval of the purchase of the new draft tube section as described in the agenda.
Second.
Is there any public comment on this matter first?
Do we not want to include the $450,000 budget transfer in the motion? Do you want that included?
As described in the agenda.
Okay. Well, it's in the agenda. It's not mentioned in the staff report. It is.
As well as the budget amendment. Mm-hmm. So the amendment number isn't in there. You're correct, Nikki, but it is.
It is $450,000, and it is in the staff report. It isn't in the item on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. You're correct. So we're assuming the budget amendment is part of the necessary documents.
In reviewing the on this topic, on a comment the chair just made, there's in reviewing the policies and procedures of our conduct, and it doesn't say that we can't have the motion and the second. You actually said, well, as a public comment, if you read through them, which I did.
It's fine.
It was interesting to read that, but we stumble on that a lot. Somewhat, I mean, you can always take the comment out of the motion because nobody's voted yet. And that's confirmed by the 5.30 or whatever we were asked to read there.
Hearing no public comment, roll call please.
Division one.
Aye.
Division two.
Aye.
Division three.
Aye.
Division four.
Aye.
Division five.
Aye.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number seven, Mead Canal Encasement Project.
Good morning, board, staff and audience. I'm Brian Powell, maintenance manager for NID. I'm here today to request approval for the purchase of 3,500 feet of 18-inch ductile iron pipe, fittings, and accessories for the Mead Canal Encasement Project in the amount of $169,230.38. This project will encase approximately 3,500 feet of the Mead Canal, which is located just east of the town of Smartsville in Yuba County. This section of canal has been a problem for operations for many years. The southern exposure of the canal and the cattle influence allows for a large production of algae and aquatic weeds in the canal, and which results in a lower quality water source and makes it more difficult to treat. This project will help with the water quality going to the treatment plant, and will help provide a higher quality water going to the residents of Smartsville. NID applied for and was awarded a $422,000 CABI grant that was targeted for disadvantaged communities in the CABI region. And this grant is administered through the Sierra Fund. There is a $300,000 is accounted for in the 2017 engineering budget for this project, of which this purchase will be taken. NID will be reimbursed. Will be reimbursed for this purchase through the CABI grant. So, are there any questions?
Absolutely necessary. Don't you agree, Fred?
Yeah. If the disinfection
pipe. A lot of safety issues involved here. Yeah. Water quality safety issues.
Absolutely.
Public comment on this item.
I have a question when it's time.
Okay. I don't see any public comments, so why don't you go ahead, Nancy?
Sorry, I just didn't want to keep my toe out of the door. Who bid for this? What companies?
Purchasing department puts out bids to several different supply companies. I believe Corex, it should be in the packet.
Is it a maintenance department installed project?
It is, yeah.
That was not clear to me. Okay.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, the maintenance department will take on the whole construction. In fact, engineering did the design, surveying.
Okay.
And maintenance.
So it's in-house? Okay.
Yep.
I see they have the new Hymax coupler.
Yes.
Specified in here.
Absolutely.
That's a new tool, isn't it?
A good one. Saves a lot of time and trouble. And
motion to approve the purchase of materials, including 3,500 feet of 18-inch ductile iron pipe fittings and other miscellaneous parts for the construction of the Mead Canal Encasement Project in the amount of $169,230.38, and authorizing the general manager to execute the necessary documents.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Division 1.
Aye.
Division 2.
Aye.
Division 3.
Aye.
Division 4?
Aye.
Division 5?
Aye.
Thank you, board.
Okay. Rem, you're on deck.
I am. Good morning,
now,
board.
Now you're at the batter's box.
Yeah. I'm walking out. So it's my pleasure to report to the board that we are currently sitting at roughly 241,000 19 acre feet in storage. We are in good stead. Other items for the board. We continue to try to work with the tribes on Greenhorn and on the sediment removal projects, as well as the EIRs. We're trying to make contact with Ms. Covert and her group, as well as the Chicago Park group, but I wanted to let the board know that that's an ongoing ongoing concern for us. We're also going to convene the Technical Advisory Committee for the Hemp Hill project on August the 8th. That is all set up for that internal group. We're still working on repairs to the Lodestar Canastoga BEP project. That's run into a bit of a conundrum on negotiation and trying to get our contractors out and working. So that will be a significant change order. We're yet to figure out what the tune of that change order is, but it's going to be in the six figures most likely. Shell Ridge Pipeline is underway. We're looking forward to connecting that tank, as well as we're starting to set up meetings for the Newtown canal abandonment, and so that's forthcoming to the board. And then lastly, we met yesterday with the video ad hoc group. I think we have a strong solution, and we're anticipating coming to the APC in August, and then the full board to the full meeting, the first meeting in September, which will be on the 13th. Thank you.
Can you describe that solution, or you prefer to wait?
So right now, it's a staff-constructed Granicus look-alike that will have a single camera in the far corner of the room. The committee has recommended that we move the public dais more towards the staff table a little bit and turn it a little bit. That way, a single camera in the far corner can see the board, can see staff, as well as the speaker. We have a live streaming solution. We have a solution that will archive for the district here at the district, and then we have a way to offcast that video to NCTV for their use at their leisure. So it meets all the needs of the group at this point, and we'll bring that to the APC, show it in its fully operational format, and then we'll bring it to the board for board approval. Yes, sir.
Who's in the group? Who's in the ad hoc committee?
So we had Mr. Thomas. We had, oh, I never get Peter's last name.
Burns,
and Ellen, and we had Stephen
Monahan
from the county, as well as Lou Sitzer from NCTV, and then I don't know the gal's name that was also from the county. So we had everybody there. All participants were there and accounted for. We went through the Granicus solution. We went through the internal solution. We went briefly talked about the NCTV solution.
So did Steve Monahan feel that the solution was equivalent to what the county's doing?
Yes and no, right? So the county sees this as a convenient way for them to cast off the liability. In other words, dial 1-800 was his term to call Granicus and make it Granicus's issue. He recognizes that our solution is similar. His concern was that our staff is the one driving the solution, and so there isn't somebody to go out and pull in to make fix. We're staff's comfortable that we have it documented sufficiently, and that the technology is strong enough to carry the district forward. And with everything, and this is something we'll talk to the board about, but if the solution doesn't work, Granicus is always there. Yes, ma'am.
Today, I think when Marvin reviewed the investment and budget updates, those materials need to be able to be viewed by anybody that recording. So how would that happen?
They absolutely will be. So every part of the agenda is available online in this solution.
In a different spot?
It's actually better than Granicus in that when we go to that topic, those materials appear right next to the topic, as opposed to Granicus, where you have to open another window and watch in tandem. So everything that's in a budget package is available to the public during the live stream, as well as later on once the video is archived.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no public comment on general matters report.
Sorry, Richard.
Good try. Okay. Board director items and reports. Let's start at Scott's end.
Nothing.
Just want to wish, again, Ram, happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, sir.
Engineers don't sing.
Well, you wouldn't want to listen to it, probably. Certainly wouldn't want to listen to me. I'm fine. Will?
We're all Zippos this time.
We're all Zippos. Great. Any public comment on items to be considered in the closed session?
We have one item.
We have item 8.
Oh, item 8, yes. Special SPRM 8. Okay. Do we have any suggestions on who to nominate?
I think everybody should mark their ballots, turn the ballots in, have the ballots quantified by the board secretary, and produce the result.
Okay, I've marked my ballot. Board members, please do that.
I didn't hear what John said.
You have a copy of the ballot in your board packet. Mark the 4 that you wish to vote for, turn it in to the board secretary, and she will announce the tally. Here's mine. And we'll recess for 2 minutes while Chris gets to do that. Okay, let's come back to order here. Drum roll, please. Please announce the results.
I have tallied the votes, and the 4 candidates are James M. Hamlin, Mike Schaefer, David Aranda, and Gene Bracey.
Okay.
Done.
Thank you.
And they're all from Southern California? I think there was only one from Northern California.
There was one from Bernie.
Bernie, Costa Mesa, Mountain Meadows, and Mojave Desert.
So 2-2.
All right.
That's where the people live. Okay.
Scott has a question.
Scott.
The general manager's report, there was no mention of, I heard we had a catastrophe on the Hemp Hill or something.
It's underway, yes. Yes.
No report?
We have no.
That's the report.
As this morning we discovered that there's a drain hole on the Hemp Hill facility, and water's going underneath the dam as opposed to being impounded by the dam. We're convening staff post this meeting to look for solutions, and then we'll start contacting the regulatory agencies.
Okay. Massive amounts of chewing gum, huh?
Where is it?
Hemp Hill is on the Auburn Ravine, just roughly 5.56 miles downstream from the AR diversion, adjacent to Turkey Creek.
Okay. And is this where we're doing well?
This is where we're considering putting in a riverbank filtration system, yes.
So if it naturally were to fail?
Yes. If it were... We would deal with that emergency.
Save us a bunch of investment in a well. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is
no, it won't save us any additional money on the well. It would save us permitting, environmental documents, and sediment removal money.
Okay.
At some point, we were not allowed to touch the area.
Right. We currently have a $177,000 grant with Fish and Wildlife to look at flow studies and do some sediment work and to start continuing to work on remediating the facility or removing the facility. We have done the studies to look at riverbank filtration and or a rainy collector system there. We just recently completed the sediment study, sediment characterization study, and flow study. So we know that we can put in a facility. We know that it'll have the appropriate amount of infiltration so that we can come off of the mainstream and start diverting water by pump. So.
Could this infiltration?
Yes.
It will make it ever so much
clearer. They'll be calling
all the analysis that ever wanted.
Either way, well, when they generated these,
no matter what way we do it,
you look at the analysis of what
we yes, but right now we have all the customers on the Hemp Hill are currently out of water.
Okay. So there's one last item. Any comments? On items to be closed in closed session, or to be discussed in closed session? Nancy, yeah?
This
is so weird. Okay.
The board came out of closed session, and direction was given to legal counsel and real property negotiators.